Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Hello and welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. My co-host today is Brian Johnson. Hey, Brian.
What's up, Charch? Good to be back.
Yes, this is a special edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. We record on Fridays every week. And today we are 12-ish hours removed from the end of the first round. And so we're really going to focus today on the first round. We don't know the second round. And we'll talk through all of the position players. Now, at some point in the future, I want to talk about some of the other elements that went into this draft, like offensive linemen who are going to help some other players and some other stuff, Brian. But for right now, let's keep this to the 3-4 quarterbacks that were taken. Let's talk about the 6 receivers that were taken and the 1 running back in the first round. Sound good?
Definitely. A lot more wide receivers than I thought, by the way, too, went in the first round.
Yeah.
I don't know about you.
This is about what I expected.
I think the over-under was 5.5, so it hit the over, not by a lot, still. I would have went under, but glad I didn't.
Well, the theory on under was there's so many good receivers, you could wait to get one. But I think at the end of the day, a lot of teams that had need, like the Vikings are a good example, at a lot of positions, just the best player there just was a receiver, and he's just so much better than everybody else. You just take Justin Jefferson in that particular case. Let's start with we'll do these in the order they were taken in, and I think a bit of a surprise to have Oakland take the first wide receiver, Henry. Oh, and by the way, before we get into the receivers, let me mention this. It's the first beautiful day in Minnesota for this spring, and I'm outside. You are going to hear random noises like crows chirping. They don't chirp. They caw. A crow cawing. You might hear a little road noise because I've got a road not too far from my house. You might hear somebody's like mowing their lawn already or something. So you may hear some stuff. But you know what? It's 70 degrees. It's the first beautiful day in Minnesota. I'm going to be outside right now.
So fall out. I won't, because I have a really annoying dog as a neighbor. Mitigate that risk and I'll stay inside and suffer. I'll be outside immediately afterwards, though.
That could happen. Now, my dogs are the annoying dogs in the neighborhood, and our next door neighbor dog already came out and they had their dust up like they always do. That just happened. So I think we're in the clear with the dogs, but we'll find out. We begin at the wide receiver position. Henry Ruggs is the first guy taken. It wouldn't have been my choice as the first one taken, but it's the Raiders, and they have the long history of coveting speed.
Yeah, and they got it in Ruggs. Ran the 4.27 40, 5'11", 190. We compared him to Tyreek Hill. That's probably his easiest comp. And Oakland got themselves a Tyreek Hill. There's now two Tyreek Hills in that AFC West. All of a sudden, bunch of awesome wide receivers in the AFC West. We'll talk about more soon. But Ruggs, you know, he didn't post huge numbers at Alabama, but again, he was competing with Jerry Jeudy for targets. And I wouldn't call it the X factor. It's one of many X factors. We'll call it a Y factor. Huge hands on Henry Ruggs.
Yeah.
10 1/8 inches. That's CeeDee Lamb for reference is 9 1/4. Jerry Jeudy, 9.5. Ruggs, huge hands, decent size. He's not afraid of contact. He's, like we said, fast as hell. So I would have went CeeDee Lamb. I think we both agree that CeeDee Lamb was
my number one.
Class, but
yep.
So at least they didn't take Jerry Jeudy. They took Henry Ruggs. We'll talk about Jeudy second. But I don't know. I would have went Lamb. But yeah, Ruggs, as he's going to be an exciting player for, I think I said Oakland, Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, right. And, you know, he walks into just a miserable group of receivers. They brought in Nelson Aguilar, who will play the slot, I believe, probably. And I'll have to battle Hunter Renfrow. But Tyrell Williams constantly hurt and did very little through the second half of the season. There's Zay Jones doesn't even count. So we'll find out if Derek Carr's got anything left in the tank. Hopefully he does. You know, I don't think he's valueless. And I think Henry Ruggs is pretty special. And if you can find those spots where he's going to hit the deep touchdown, which will happen, you'll have to be smart about trying to pick your spots. Do you have an initial sense of where Henry Ruggs would be ranked among wide receivers for you? I want to say that he's going to be in the 30s.
Yeah. Are we talking? We're talking just from a redraft standpoint.
Redraft
right
standpoint
now.
Only.
Not dynasty.
I want to do a whole future show on the dynasty value of these guys.
Yeah. Definitely.
But that's later. Should,
Yeah, definitely in the 30s. I mean, he's a wide receiver three at best, I feel like, at least for the first half of the season. He might, you know, as he ramps up further along into the season, at least he's got Darren Waller to help keep defenses honest, though. That's all I can say.
Yeah, there's that. I just think that whole passing offense just goes through him right away. Yeah. And 30 might seem high to some people, but the other guys that you're going to find in the 30s are John Brown, Marquise Brown, Marvin Jones,
Golden Tate. Golden Tate.
Yeah.
I think Chark will be higher than that, personally. You know,
it could be. So anyway. That to me is why I think Ruggs will fit into that sort of spot. All right, let's go to our next wide receiver. Denver next up. Denver, I think, was sweating that all three of those receivers could have been gone before their pick, because the Jets, the Raiders, and the Niners went 11, 12, 13, and many people, me, had them going receiver, receiver, receiver. And that would have left Denver with the fourth best receiver. And I had Justin Jefferson penciled in for Denver. Instead, Jerry Jeudy drops to them. What do you think of the Jerry Jeudy fit for Denver?
Immediate facepalm. I was like, oh my God, CeeDee Lamb is there. He's sitting on a silver platter.
That's what I was
Denver, who has Cortland Sutton, who's like a Batman receiver, right? So I guess they wanted a Robin, because that's what Jerry Jeudy is. They didn't want two Batmans. They could have had two we could be talking about the two best wide receiver, you know, the best wide receiver duo in the NFL in Cortland Sutton and CeeDee Lamb next season, possibly. But I don't know.
Jerry Jeudy's not bad. I mean, the way you're making it sound is like, dude was incredibly productive, and he's, arguably the most pro-ready of any of the receivers in this class.
He is, but you and I and a lot of people had Lamb just basically in his own tier as the top receiver, and Ruggs was right there, and Jeudy was right there behind Ruggs. So I don't know. We should mention really quick, when we said the Jets didn't take a receiver, big win for Breshad Perriman.
Very true.
And even Jamison Crowder, they might take a day two guy, day three probably, but still, they didn't take one of the elite guys. So that's a big boon for Breshad Perriman shares out there. But back to Jeudy. Again, at Alabama with Henry Ruggs, he was the 1A option there. 24 touchdowns across his last two seasons, but 6'1", 195. It just doesn't have standout size, speed. He seems like a nice complementary receiver, which is what it'll be for Sutton. But they should have swung for the fences and went with Lamb. But I don't know. But Jeudy will be a fine player, and Denver all of a sudden is very exciting offense.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the problem from a fantasy standpoint for Jerry Jeudy, Cortland Sutton is already an accomplished go-to number one receiver on that team. And I don't know that Jerry gets up to being a 1B. I think he remains the number two guy. And you just hinted at this. I think he stays. I think he's Robin to Cortland Sutton's Batman.
Well, and he might be. Who's the third in the Batman group, right? Because Noah Fant might be Robin for all.
Yeah, I think it is probably Noah Fant. Deshaun Hamilton flashed for a little bit, but Tim Patrick. No. I mean, those guys aren't going to threat. It's probably Noah Fant who these guys unlock some real downfield speed in Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy. So I think the underneath will open up for Noah Fant a little bit as well. I suspect right now Jerry Jeudy would be roughly in the 50s for me. I think he's going to be in the Emmanuel Sanders, Anthony Miller, Sterling Shepard, Preston
almost
Williams,
like kind of handcuff for Cortland Sutton. It's like it's like one of the rare wide receiver handcuff scenarios if you draft Cortland Sutton. But what does this do for Drew Lock? He's like borderline quarterback one now, and top 12 quarterback, not the top overall quarterback, but it's exciting offense now.
It is
still a nice compliment.
It is. It's not a bad pick. By any stretch. Now, let's go to CeeDee Lamb, who was the next receiver taken. I was stunned when Dallas took him. In fact, as I was doing the Vikings
Network. I could have taken him. Sorry to cut you off before we go there, right? Atlanta, they should have taken Lamb.
Well, they had two good receivers, too. They had a gaping need at cornerback.
Still, you had the best player sitting there. Just take the best player. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So Dallas is on the clock, and I'm doing radio in the Twin Cities, and I say, man, look at the needs that Dallas has, and they need cornerback. They need safety. They need defensive tackle, defensive end. The only thing I know for sure about this Dallas pick is it's not going to be offense. Bam, CeeDee Lamb, and I look like an ass. So,
well, this is it didn't fully make up for the Randy Moss gaffe many years ago when Dallas should have drafted Randy Moss, passed on because of the character issue. CeeDee Lamb didn't have character issues, but I think Jerry Jones is just like, you know what? This will make up for it somewhat, I guess. But they took the best player. That's what Jerry should have done.
Jerry Jones played fantasy football.
Yeah.
He did. I mean, he just went fantasy football on his team, and he said, you know what? Good luck. Stop. We'll score 50. You know, figure out a way to stop us. You know, this is CeeDee Lamb is in time going to be the best receiver on this team. And they already had really good receivers. Amari Cooper, obviously. And then Michael Gallup just emerged in a huge way last year. And now with CeeDee Lamb, I think CeeDee Lamb's the best of the bunch. The problem is, the good thing is, how do you double cover any of those guys? You can't. So, I mean, there are going to be guys open all the time, ready for big plays. The downside is there's just one ball to go between them. How do you feel about CeeDee Lamb's fantasy prospects, especially in the short term?
Probably the worst landing spot for the short term, one would think. He'll still be a factor, but he's I would be hard pressed to, if I had to pick between he and Ruggs in redraft, I might have to go with Ruggs just because I feel he'll get more targets than Lamb.
The opportunity.
And in Dallas, they've always wanted to kill the clock, run the ball, and they're in a soft division, so they might be able to do that more so than not. So yeah, I don't know. Lamb is, he's in the mid to late 30s when he could have been a top 24 option, you know, if he landed on the Jets perhaps or something like that.
Yeah.
But now he's on Dallas, and there's a lot of eye popping stats for Lamb, but again, never dropped a pass of 20 plus yards in his 3 seasons at Oklahoma.
Unbelievable.
And he caught a lot of them.
Yeah. Second most broken tackles last year, 26. Absolutely electric after that. He's the best receiver after the catch in this draft. The instinctiveness, number one across college football in yards run per route. He wins all these contested catches. And just after he catches the ball, you think he's dead, that the defense has got him cornered. There's 3 men between him and the end zone. And the next thing you know, he's put some crazy freaking move on these dudes, and he's running down the sideline untouched. You're like, what happened? How did you do this? An immediate impact player, just a very tricky landing spot, unfortunately. And I think what that's going to mean for him and Cooper and Gallup is they're going to have some down games where they're going to have 2 catch games while the other guys are blowing up. And it's going to add a lot of volatility. And for a guy like Amari Cooper, who was already that way, you know, Cooper was already, you know, big box score, little box score, big box score, little box score. I think it adds just that much more, I guess, variability to their potential output.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree. Dak is already a top 5 option for the most part, a quarterback. But, man, I think I like Dak more than Deshaun Watson now, even though I might have liked Dak more than Deshaun Watson ever since they practically jettisoned DeAndre Hopkins from Houston. But a big boon for Dak, though. But, yeah, it's going to be hard to peg which receiver is going to go off on any given Sunday. This year, unfortunately, won't be this year where the NFC East, where the Cowboys play, are playing the AFC West.
Yeah.
They're not doing that this year, but when they do play the AFC West, the NFC East, that is, think of CeeDee Lamb gets to face Oakland and Denver in the same season and show them what a huge mistake
they made.
they made and not drafting him.
Well, that's how we feel
not
anyway.
This year.
CeeDee Lamb, I believe I will have ranked in the 40s in the same kind of ballpark with Jerry Jeudy. And, his dynasty value is different than that. And we'll talk about that in a different show. But from a redraft standpoint, I believe he'll be in the 40s as sort of a fourth tier guy who I expect to have, again, big games and small games, perhaps roughly alternating this year. Let's take a break. And then I want to turn my attention to the next wide receiver taken, Jalen Reagor. And we'll also talk about Justin Jefferson and Brandon Ayuk as the remaining first round receivers. Paul Jarchi and Brian Johnson with you. You're listening to Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Jarchian and Brian Johnson. You can follow us both. I'm at Paul Jarchian. You'll figure out the spelling. Everybody always does eventually. And Brian is at BTXJ, at BTXJ on Twitter. We encourage you to
And not only can I... not only can I dole out fantasy football advice now, Charge, I'm getting pretty good at esports now in these times. I've focused a lot of energy on watching League of Legends and Counter-Strike, and I don't fully know what's going on while I'm watching, but I can,
that won't stop you from doling out advice.
Yeah, winning lineups. No, I can at least tell you to put a good lineup together.
Are you a big Minnesota Rocker fan?
Call of Duty, just getting rolled out this week in the DFS world. I will be doing some hometown stacking of the Rocker team.
Speaking of DFS, I am, as of this morning, a proud co-owner of DraftKings.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
How much stake?
Can't say.
Can't say.
You know, enough that I'm calling Jason Robbins and giving him some advice, things that he needs to know.
There you go.
Very important. Nice. Let's get back to
it. Quite the ride for those guys.
Yeah, quite the ride. It really is. It's a story. I've told Jason this several times. It really is. It's going to be a movie someday. It's destined to be a movie.
More like an HBO, like a mini series. I think it'd be better. Like an HBO thing would be great.
HBO generally does it right. All right, let's go to Philadelphia. They took the fourth receiver off the board, Jalen Reagor. Most people had Justin Jefferson going to Philadelphia. I did. They end up going with Reagor instead. And I think the reason they did it, Brian, was because they wanted to get a receiver who they felt more comfortable running outside. Jefferson primarily running from the slot last year. And I think Reagor gives you the opportunity to get somebody that can play inside, but also has proven to be a solid producing receiver on the outside as well. What are your thoughts about the fit for the Eagles? And Lord knows they needed help at the position. Holy cow.
Yeah, they're probably not done drafting receivers. But yeah, we pegged Reagor as a possible day one guy, and he obviously turned out to be one. A little bit of a head-scratching pick, though. I did think Philly would take Justin Jefferson as well. Reagor didn't have a lot of great numbers last year, but that's he was playing with
horrible
a transfer quarterback
TCU, and
a true freshman as well. So I don't know. From a redraft standpoint, Reagor's got a bit of the dropsies, I've heard, case of the dropsies, but when it comes to opportunity and quarterback and prolific offense, I think he stands to have the best season of any rookie wide receiver this year if it's not Henry Ruggs.
Yeah, it is possible. It's just because, so much of fantasy football is about opportunity. This whole passing offense may end up going through Jalen Reagor sooner than later, and as soon as potentially this year, just because who else are you going to trust? I mean, look at they were making do with the likes of Greg Ward last year. They didn't have a healthy body to throw at that position. And God only knows what the status of Alshon Jeffery is going to be going forward. And you can't really trust him at all. So you get the feeling that you're marrying Jalen Reagor. All the productivity you got, despite the terrible quarterbacking at TCU, the elite level of athleticism, his double move is ridiculous. He battles for every contested ball. And now we're going to hook him up with potentially some pretty darn good quarterbacking in Carson Wentz. And the upside here seems to be awfully high.
Yeah, I think right now, I think the sharp play, I mean, people aren't sharp on Reagor yet. I think if you're drafting right now in best ball or even just seasonal, people are still going to gravitate towards CD Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs. You probably get Reagor one, two, three rounds later than those guys. When again, he probably will outproduce all those guys in his rookie year based on the expected volume he's going to get. So yeah, Reagor, a sneaky play, a sleeper as of right now in my mind.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm really interested in him. I think for redraft for this year, he'll be in the 30s for me again. I like him. I like him. Just the opportunity to me is just so good. So I think he's in the conversation with some of the guys we mentioned in the 30s before, the Marvin Jones and Marquise Brown and John Brown and Christian Kirk. I think he's in that. I think he's in that level of conversation for redraft of this coming season. Let's go to the next player taken. That's Justin Jefferson of Minnesota. Vikings end up replacing Stephon Diggs with a player who's pretty different than Diggs. Jefferson ran 80% of his plays from the slot last year, but the year before that played much more outside. What was fascinating about Jefferson in the slot, so many of the slot receivers are Cole Beasley. You're running 8-yard slants and here comes the ball and let's see what you do after the catch. That's not the way LSU used Justin Jefferson at all. They were running full route trees out of the slot for him. Bombs 40 yards downfield out of the slot repeatedly. And he's getting separation. And when he's not, he's winning contested catches. He's one of the best contested catch receivers in this league and insanely productive. Top three in college football in receptions, yards, and touchdowns. That's Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, and not built like a stereotypical slot receiver either. 6'2", 200 plus pounds. He's got size, and he can win on the outside if his route tree gets extended to the outside in the pros. But he has no real weaknesses. But we went over this a couple weeks ago with Jefferson. He might have the safest floor of all these day one wide receivers, but not the highest ceiling. He doesn't have that superstar potential, it seems, but he's going to be a very solid pro, and he should contribute right away now that Stephon Diggs no longer a Viking. But I don't know, they kind of got two slot guys in Thielen and Justin Jefferson now, so some adjustments are going to have to be made by somebody, but I think both these guys are good enough that shouldn't be too much of a problem.
They'll find ways to use both, and you're right. Adam Thielen's his best productivity does come from the slot, but he plays a lot outside as well, and I think they will use both in and outside, and sometimes I think they'll both be inside. They'll have four receiver sets, so they'll use Thielen and Jefferson inside. I think there's another guy that feels like he's the 30s are getting crowded here. He feels like he could be in the 30s for me. Maybe he's a little closer to 40, but Justin Jefferson's going to be somebody that ends up getting a lot of playing time beginning week one. And he's got a strong armed quarterback in Kirk Cousins that can get him the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. He's going to definitely be a viable wide receiver three option, I would think, this season.
I'm going to call him high 40s in the Darius Slayton level conversation right now for Justin Jefferson. In a different year, Justin Jefferson could have been the first wide receiver taken. The final receiver taken in the draft this year was San Francisco taking Brandon Ayuk, a JUCO transfer who ended up being incredibly productive. And somebody that I think the steam on him just kept growing and growing. He's explosive. He's got deep speed. He's also a return guy for those in leagues that give extra points for returns. You'll get return yardage and potentially touchdowns as both a kick returner and a punt returner. What are your thoughts on Brandon Ayuk, who probably slots in as a day one, game one starter?
Yeah, I was a little surprised to see San Francisco move up to draft him, but then I read today that Kyle Shanahan had him ranked as his number one wide receiver on his big board with CeeDee Lamb closely behind. So I'm like, wow.
Wow.
And Kyle Shanahan has bred some pretty nice receivers over his career, starting with, you know, Josh Gordon, Julio Jones. The list goes on and on. Pierre Garçon. Yeah.
Well, look what he did for Debo Samuel as a rookie.
Yeah, Samuel. But Ayuk built similarly to Henry Ruggs. He's about 5'10", 5'11", 190 to 200 pounds, but he's got the wingspan of Megatron. His wingspan is 81 inches. He's
unreal.
A freak of nature in that sense. So his catch radius is much bigger than it seems. So, Ayuk, you know, he's going to arguably be the top wide receiver. Debo Samuel's a mighty fine player. Of course, George Kittle's in tow in San Francisco. He's the top receiving option. But Ayuk is, again, we're running out of numbers in the 30s, I think. But he's you can't argue if you put him in that kind of range.
I know. It's just so many good receivers this year, Brian. It's crazy. There was only one running back taken in the first round, which was one more than many people expected, but I had mocked running back to the Chiefs. I had it as DeAndre Swift because I thought they might want a little more muscle at the position, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire is so much fun, and he's so good. He is going to be Brian Westbrook for Andy Reid, just like Westbrook was with the Eagles. If you think Maurice Jones-Drew, you've got the right idea on Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and what a fascinating development this is for fantasy players.
Yeah, I mean, he's a top 10 running back right now, I would have to say, in redraft. You know, quick reaction.
I think he's built like
a house. He's got speed. He's got moves. He can catch the ball. He's obviously on the most prolific offense in the NFL. Damian Williams is still going to factor in, but
I know that's the fly in the ointment, isn't it?
It is. But man, Andy Reid, he already said that CEH is better than Brian Westbrook, his most productive running back of all time. I don't know how he can really make that call already.
I think Brian Westbrook is number two in total yards all time.
Oh, yeah.
He was a return guy. Get in the return yards and stuff.
Yeah.
I top 10 might be aggressive. Let me throw some. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, based on what we know right now, which in my mind is that I think he's a 60-40 timeshare winner. I think he's on the 60 side of 60-40, and maybe it's more like 70-30.
But in that offense, that's like 70-30 at least on an average team, right?
I know.
75-25 even.
Yeah,
just right. To get that 60% piece of that juicy pie.
Exactly. City, so but, if it came down to him or, let's say, Kenyon Drake, Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Kenyon Drake?
Oh, man. The offense is exciting enough. The prospects of it in Arizona, I probably lean Drake, who's going to be more of a bell cow situation. Right. I think it's that close.
I'm giving you guys in that 10 to 12 range. Austin Eckler.
Oof. I probably have on the heels of last season. And now that Gordon's gone, I'd have to lean Eckler, but they're not easy decisions. They're definitely, it's not a 10 out of 10 scenario where I take Eckler every time. That's for sure.
No. Josh Jacobs or Clyde Edwards-Helaire PPR.
I might have to go Edwards-Helaire there. I know Jacobs. I was down on Jacobs last year. I was wrong, but now the offense is outweighing the player and Edwards-Helaire might be a better player than Josh Jacobs. He probably is actually. So
yeah, I love him here. So let's touch on him for just a second, a little bit more for people that maybe, I don't know how you couldn't have seen his game at some point because LSU was so high profile, but the low center of gravity, powerful, compact runner, excellent short space footwork. And that ends up giving defenders a lot of bad angles on tackles that don't end up connecting very well. And he breaks a ton of them. He's got amazing balance and a spin move that's devastating. He's a good, good receiver. Maybe the best receiving back among the elite backs here in this draft. So there's just a ton to like for him altogether. And a lot. I just think the only real knock on Clyde Edwards-Helaire is, you know, at the combine he ran a 4.6, and people really expected that to be more like a 4.5. And so the slower combine time for some people was a bit of a red flag, but obviously not for Andy Reid.
You know, he seems like a guy, though, who's not going to be weighed down by pads at all. I feel like he might run faster in pads, whereas other running backs run. And by the way, they should at least wear helmets and pads in the combine when they're running these drills. I don't understand.
I'm kind of with you. They never, you know, they're never in a track shorts when they play the game. So I'm kind of with you.
They're never playing in the Speedos. But anyway, Edwards-Helaire. He's the top rookie running back off the boards, regardless where these other guys fall, though. I would have to say.
I think it's too early to say that. There's too many good running backs. You know, Taylor falls into the perfect spot, or DeAndre Swift in the perfect spot, or J.K. Dobbins in the perfect spot, we're gonna have another conversation. And that'll be, by the way, that'll be the next podcast. Next week's podcast will be the rest of the draft after the first round. We'll touch on the key players who went afterwards. And speaking of coming up next. After this break, we will talk about the quarterbacks, the four quarterbacks, what their prospects look like in the short term and long term for Joe Burrow, Tua, Justin Herbert, Jordan Love. We'll talk through those guys in just moments. It is Fantasy Football Weekly with Paul Charchian and Brian Johnson. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchian and Brian Johnson with you. We're breaking down the first round rookies as we're recording. I'm in my backyard. It is the first beautiful day of spring in Minnesota. We have one round to work with. Next week, we'll break down rounds two and beyond. This week, we're focusing on the players that went on round one. We've already done the running backs. We've done running back singular. We've done six of the wide receivers. Now we turn our attention to the quarterbacks taken in this draft in the first round, beginning with Joe Burrow. It's the obvious pick as Joe Burrow comes off arguably the greatest passing season in the history of college football. And he has a lot of advantages that a lot of quarterbacks don't have, Brian, in that he gains a pretty complete set of offensive players around him to help support him in a way that a lot of players that go first overall don't have. And, you know, for example, if Miami had the first pick, which I think was the plan all along, they did not have all the weapons around Joe Burrow that the Bengals have got. You know, A.J. Green, John Ross, Tyler Boyd, Joe Mixon. These are quality players that can take a lot of heat off of him and really unlock some playmaking ability.
Yeah, it's definitely an underrated arsenal in Cincinnati that never got to play together last year. AJ Green missed the whole season. I mean, John Ross got off that amazing start, and then he practically missed the whole season. So, yeah, if all those guys can stay healthy, Burrow's got something to work with. And, you know, he's got the size you want, 6'3", 220. Underrated as a runner as well. He had almost 400 rushing yards and 5 rushing touchdowns last year at LSU. So, not the biggest arm, but it's above
it's
average.
Plenty of arms.
Incredibly accurate. Burrow will be a spot starter in one quarterback leagues this year, in redraft leagues for sure.
Yeah, no kidding.
He's not a top 12 option by any means, but I think he'd be inside the top 20 almost, just based on the fact that since he's going to be, remember, it's fantasy football, it's not reality football. So the Bengals are usually chasing points and
putting the
ball in the air. So you got to like it. So,
you know, and at this point, I think most of our listeners are already very familiar with Joe Burrow. But needless to say, the NFL game's not going to be too big for him. You look at what he did in big games, and he's just, you know, there's nothing to suggest that he isn't headed on a path of superstardom. So we love Joe Burrow. Just again, redraft, and we'll have a dynasty. We'll have a whole separate dynasty show later. Redraft. Where are you looking at Joe Burrow as? And you mentioned you think he could be a spot start QB1 as a rookie, right?
Yeah, definitely. The matchup is right.
So what are we talking about? Are we talking
healthy
about quarterback 15? Is he in the Matthew Stafford, Tannehill, Drew Lock range?
He's a little behind those guys in my mind. Definitely behind Lock now that they drafted Jerry Jeudy. Burrow's like the perfect quarterback to draft if you invest early in a Mahomes, or Lamar Jackson, mm-hmm. or a Dak Prescott even. Wait on Burrow. He's going to go probably around the 20th quarterback off the board, one would imagine. So I'll put him right around there.
All right. Next up, Miami with pick 5. They held tight at pick 5, sweating bullets, I believe, hoping that Tua Tagovailoa would fall to them, and he did. And so it all worked out for Miami. You know, their whole premise all last year was tank for Tua. They ended up winning some games that they probably didn't intend to win, but they ended up winning games, and they still got Tua. So it turned out okay for them. I don't know. You know, I think the big question for fantasy owners is going to be, is he a week 1 starter? Is he a week 9 starter? Or does he sit the whole season? That's going to be one of the really difficult things, at least now, as we're, you know, several months away from the start of the season. That's going to be one of the big questions on Tua is, you know, how long of a runway do they give Ryan Fitzpatrick before they ease Tua into play?
Yeah, well, Tua probably wouldn't have been there if not for the hip injury for Miami number 5. Yeah. Tua probably would have been the number 1 overall. He could have been arguably the number 1 quarterback taken if he was, you know, a full healthy season at Alabama. But that didn't happen, so we won't discuss that. But, you know, I think Tua sits for the majority of the season because Fitzpatrick looked pretty good towards the end of last year. And Miami's got something cooking down in South Beach. And let's not forget that the Patriots are not really the Patriots anymore. And
oh, God, no.
It's wide open now. And Ryan Fitzpatrick could lead the Dolphins to an AFC East division title, even though I think Buffalo takes it home. But yeah, Tua, this is, I know we're not talking too many dynasty implications, but I'm not drafting Tua in redraft. You're obviously taking Burrow before Tua in redraft. But if I'm taking a quarterback in dynasty, I'm probably taking Tua over Burrow because I think long-term injury is not a concern, at least the hip, you know, so mm-hmm. an injury like anyone else is possible for any player. So I'm going to a long-term over Burrow, but definitely Burrow in the short term.
Okay.
That's a no-brainer.
Yeah. Back to your Patriots Dolphins. As it is today, the Friday after round one, in which the Patriots traded out of round one and the Dolphins had 3 first round picks, I would rather have the Dolphins roster than the Patriots. And I don't think it's very close.
Yeah. I can't argue that.
I'd rather have the Patriots coach. As long as I don't have to deal with them, I'd rather have that coach. Let's go to the third quarterback taken. Pick number 6, the Chargers taking Justin Herbert. This despite off-season repeatedly saying Tyrod Taylor, we love Tyrod Taylor, we're ready to go to war with Tyrod Taylor all the time. And then Tyrod Taylor, same thing as Baker Mayfield when he was with the Browns, right? Baker, they were doing the same thing with the Browns, talking about Tyler Taylor could be their starter and, you know, they don't need to take a quarterback. And then they take a quarterback who presumably will end up starting sooner than later over Tyrod Taylor.
Do you think? I think until they fall out of contention, which they probably will, the Los Angeles Chargers, but I think Tyrod starts the season as the starter, basically rendering Herbert useless in redraft drafts. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be targeting him in drafts by any means. I think he's more of a project than Tua and definitely Burrow. So I'm not too excited about Herbert's prospects this season. And I don't know. I'm not sold on him long-term either. I know we're not really going there now. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't have a ton of exciting things to say about Herbert. He's not really going to factor in 2020.
You know, he'll be a much more interesting conversation when in our Dynasty podcast, because long-term, when he can work out some of the issues that he's got, accuracy, you know, the fumbling, you know, it's a whole different conversation. I could see Herbert, just the arm is so good. I could see long-term where Herbert's got a lot of value. I just am not sure that it's going to materialize this season. I think he starts sooner than you do, but that's, you know, that's neither here nor there, because he's probably not draftable. Last guy, and he's totally undraftable in redraft, is Jordan Love to the Green Bay Packers in a shocking and frankly baffling move.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say. There's nothing to say when it comes to redraft, right? He's not going to play this year. No. He's not going to play next. He's not going to play until Rodgers gets hurt or just gets so pissed off that he quits football.
What about trading? What about traded?
How about I was saying traded to the Patriots.
Patriots got right. The picks. This is the only team that needs a quarterback that's left is are the Patriots. And so that makes, you know, that makes, I've already seen a bunch of tweets from people talking about how the Patriots with all the draft capital that they've got as we head into Friday's draft could end up moving for Aaron Rodgers. It's not going to happen, but it's still fun to talk about.
It's not a huge window. It's a very small window, but there is a window open right now for the Packers to win the Super Bowl, but they pretty much just slammed it shut. I mean, if they're going to trade up, they trade up and you draft CeeDee Lamb, give Rodgers something to work with.
Yeah, right.
Outside of Davante Adams and, you know, Aaron Jones, but yeah, a perplexing move.
The Packers may have somebody like T. Higgins or LaVisca Chenault or Denzel Mims or Michael Pittman fall to them. At the bottom of the second round, that's a real possibility for them.
You can't fault the long-term play, but I mean, but when you have,
no, you can't,
the best you can in this instance. Yes.
Yeah. I think you can. I mean, you know, Love has got a lot of work to do, lot. Now, fortunately, he'll have a lot of time to get it straightened out. He'll have a matter of years to learn behind Aaron Rodgers. And if Aaron Rodgers gets bitchy about this, I'm going to lose it, because he was this guy to Brett Favre. He can't, he can't have an attitude about this at all. And if he does, shame on him.
I'll never forget how pissed off Jordan Love's girlfriend looked when she got the news. They're going to Green Bay.
What?
I was like, she looked so upset.
She was like, oh, I'm going to Los Angeles and Mike, you know, my boyfriend is going to be a big star in L.A. and he's going to be the Chargers quarterback or whatever. No, you're going to Green Bay to sit on the bench. I hope you enjoy Country Kitchen,
where the tallest buildings are water towers.
Got it. Yeah,
pretty
Brian, it's been a lot of fun. The rest of the draft will be a ton of fun. Next week's show, we'll break down the rest of the draft. Not every single player like we did this time, so you can't. Too many players. But the notable players that came out of rounds 2 through 7 will be the next show. I believe it'll be Matt Harrison's turn up to bat, right?
Sounds about right.
I think that sounds about right. We'll probably have Matt Harrison on the show for that. Thanks, Brian. Great job. Thank you for listening.
Yep.
Fantasy Football Weekly, back with you next week. Bye-bye.
Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.